and welcome to The Morning Magazine, your Front Range morning news program here on Community Radio KGNU. It's Friday, May 3rd. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Hanalee Myers. Coming up on today's Morning Magazine, it's the first Friday of the month, and that means we have another edition of the Nature Almanac for you. This morning, we'll join our Boulder naturalists as they search for song sparrows and the true meaning of opera. Then we'll have a live conversation about a new first-in-the-nation child-friendly printed city map that's helping kids learn how to navigate their way around Boulder. We'll close the program with Tech Talks. This week, the students at the Innovation Center in Longmont take a look at different careers that use technology. Today, we'll hear about the film industry. At 8:30 on Connections, KGNU's Kathy Partridge talks transformational organizing with Reverend Susan Eng, author of the newly released book, Women's Work, The Transformational Power of Faith-Based Community Organizing. As always, you'll be invited to call in and join that conversation on Connections at 8:30. But first, at 5 minutes past 8 o'clock, it's time for your local headlines. Here's Steve Miller.
On Thursday, the CU Board of Regents voted 5-4 to appoint Mark Kennedy as the next president of the University of Colorado. Maeve Conran has more.
Yesterday's vote was along party lines, with all four Democrats voting against and all five Republican regents voting in favor of Kennedy. It came despite a huge outpouring of public opposition to the selection and the selection process. Speaking after the vote, Mark Kennedy responded to some of the criticism that had been levied at him on his record on inclusivity and equality, particularly pertaining to the LGBTQ community, while president of the University of North Dakota.
I think if you look at my record at the University of North Dakota and during my time in academia, it's a very strong record. So if there's a specific thing that we haven't done in those universities, let's talk about what we need to do further. But our policies at University of North Dakota are as strong or stronger than those at University of Colorado. And if you look at the actions that I've advanced, they've also moved that university forward, and I'll look forward to moving University of Colorado in collaboration with the shared governance organizations throughout the university forward as it relates to being even more inclusive, even more committed to diversity.
The Denver Post reports that Kennedy will receive $650,000 in base pay in his first year. That's a roughly 81% increase over the outgoing CU president's pay. Starting in June of 2020, Kennedy's annual base salary will rise to $850,000. Mark Kennedy takes over from Bruce Benson, who retires in July. For KGNU, I'm Maeve Conran.
Rocky Mountain gun owners, a conservative pro-gun group, and Republican lawmakers yesterday submitted a challenge to Colorado's red flag law in Denver District Court. Colorado Independent reports that the challenge claims that Democrats failed to follow proper legislative procedure when passing the bill. The red flag bill is also known as an extreme risk protection order, which seeks to reduce gun violence. The bill would allow law enforcement to temporarily confiscate a person's firearms if a judge rules he or she is a threat to themselves or others. All of Colorado's Republican lawmakers voted against the bill that was debated earlier this year. During the debate, GOP lawmakers asked that the bill be read at length, which is their right, but some feel it was used to delay the bill. Democrats responded by having multiple clerks read different sections of the bill at the same time. The gun lobby felt that the Democrats' tactic was a violation of the Colorado Constitution, and therefore the law should be annulled. Dudley Brown, executive director of the Rocky Mountain Gun Owners, said that they are prepared to submit another lawsuit if this one fails. He also said that the group is preparing a petition to recall several state lawmakers who backed Colorado's red flag law. Boulder County is announcing they will closely watch how nearby Weld County fashions new rules in response to recently passed oil and gas regulations. Rod Bruski has more.
Wednesday, the Weld County Commissioners announced plans to interpret a new oil and gas law increasing local control over extraction practices to support drilling in Weld County, not suppress it. The Times Call reports, with many large-scale drilling sites popping up along Boulder's eastern border, Boulder County leadership says Weld County's interpretation of the new extraction laws will determine how they formulate Boulder's oil and gas regulations. In a press release, Weld County announced they are planning a June 10th hearing to formally designate unincorporated Weld as a oil and gas local control county that will defend the extraction industry's role in Weld's economy. Environmental activists have expressed concerns about the new local control laws leading to conflicts with drilling-friendly counties like Weld, placing drill sites along borders with counties that are pushing back against oil and gas activities. For KGNU, I'm Rod Bruski.
At the state capitol Thursday, Colorado State Senate approved a bill updating how sex education is taught in Colorado and should reach the governor's desk unimpeded. Another bill making it harder for parents to get an exemption for their children from vaccination requirements for public schools died yesterday during the state Senate's General Assembly. House Bill 1312 would have required parents looking for a vaccination exemption to complete a form in person at a state health department office. And today in Denver, starting at 10:30 this morning, youth concerned about climate change will be walking out of school and joining together on the west steps of the Capitol to demand climate change now. In the weekend's weather, sunny and mostly sunny today through Sunday. Temperatures in the upper 60s today, lower 70s tomorrow, and mid-70s on Sunday. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
It's May. What's happening in the natural world? Here are Boulder naturalists Steve Jones and Scott Sievers.
The moon is still out. The sun is just about to come up. We're back at Coot Lake, and this time we're looking for song sparrows, one of the most beautiful and robust sparrows in North America. They have long rufous tails and rufous striking on their breasts. They're plump birds, and they live in wetland areas, and they're aptly named because they're one of the most creative singers of our songbirds.
Song sparrows really like these big willow thickets, especially in marshes. I hear a song sparrow, just their little beck note that they make. It's kind of a little beck that they use. This is a contact note. Pointing to this strand of more sandbar willows and the song sparrow calling back there.
One we've heard, the first song sparrow. It's a very complex song. It has some introductory chip notes, and it sort of goes da 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 da, sort of like Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. There it is over there. And then it's followed by a number of trills and chips. The cool thing about song sparrows is each territorial male can sing anywhere from 6 to 10 songs, and each song is distinct. If you listen long enough, you can hear different songs.
Single note chip.
Oh, he just gave the first chip notes and then he didn't say anything else. I'm going to play one here on my phone very softly. We don't want to distract the song sparrows, but I'll just play this fairly softly. You'll get an idea of the song. Isn't that amazing? Here's another one. It's so complex, we can barely hear all the complexity. Here's one more. And you notice that third one was totally different from the first two. So it turns out that the song sparrows who have the most songs, the biggest song repertoire, get most of the copulations. The females are listening. They're just hanging out, and they're listening to the different males. And when they hear a male that has a really robust repertoire, 8 or 9 songs or whatever, and his songs are really good, then she's attracted to him. And it also turns out that males with overlapping territories have different sets of songs. I mean, they share some songs, but then they have songs they don't share. And then all over North America, song sparrows have different accents. In California, they sound different than the ones in Colorado. And you could probably, if you recorded all their songs, you could probably tell exactly where an individual song sparrow lived by its repertoire and its accents. I don't know why they don't sing all the songs of all their neighbors, though. That's a little confusing.
It's probably related to its complexity, wouldn't you think, Steve?
Yeah, and as Scott said, maybe it sounds more complex to them. And the more complex the song they can sing, probably they think they have the better chance of attracting a mate. You know, when I teach my bird singing class, more women take these classes than men. And I always ask them at the start of the class which classical singer they prefer, Luciano Pavarotti. Or Andrea Bocelli. Almost all of them say Andrea Bocelli. And you know, as beautiful as his voice is, and I love his singing, he couldn't get opera parts in Italy. He didn't have a strong enough voice to sing in the major operas, whereas Pavarotti was one of the great opera singers of all time. So the question is, what is the quality of Andrea Bocelli's singing that's attractive to women? And how does that relate to song sparrows and other songbirds? And I think with sparrows and songbirds, we don't know what it is. We can only guess. But certainly the variety of the repertoire is something we've identified. So if a male song sparrow can sing more songs, he's more likely to attract mates. But there may be some of that vulnerability that Andrea Bocelli has, that some song sparrow males may have that vulnerability sound and it attracts females. I kind of doubt it, but you never know.
Steve Jones is co-author of Wild Boulder County. Scott Sievers is a wildlife biologist.
And you can always get an update on what's happening in the natural world the first Friday of the month here on The Morning Magazine. The time is 8:16. You're listening to your independent community radio station, KGNU. In Boulder, more than 30 organizations and 700 children, parents, and caregivers work together to create the nation's first printed child-friendly city map. Tomorrow morning, hundreds of young map makers and members of the community will celebrate the map's launch at the Boulder Jewish Community Center at a sold-out event. Here to tell us more, we have Mara Mincer, the director of Growing Up Boulder, one of the groups that spearheaded the project. Mara, thank you so much for joining me in the studio this morning.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us about this map and why it's important.
So I helped co-found our organization, Growing Up Boulder, which is a program out of the University of Colorado Boulder, out of our Community Engagement Design and Research, or CEDAR Center, 10 years ago. And my daughter was 1 year old at the time. And I always had this dream that we would have an easier way to navigate the city for parents and children to really take advantage of resources here. And because Growing Up Boulder is Boulder's Child and Youth Friendly City Initiative, and we work with a lot of underrepresented children and families, I've been hearing the same request from families and children over these 10 years. They want to know what's available, and often people don't know what's available to them. And so finally, 10 years later, during our 10th year anniversary, we've had the opportunity to create the nation's first printed child-friendly city map. And it has all sorts of joyful, exciting activities, such as hikes and outdoor spaces that people can use, cultural and educational resources. Basically, the map highlights free or low-cost places around town, but it's also bilingual. The other thing it does, though, is it really looks at what amenities a parent would be looking for. So I remember changing my daughter on the back of a toilet seat, you know, in a restaurant, or not finding enough shady spaces to play outdoors, or what do you do on a rainy day indoors? And so what we've been able to do with this map is highlight all those amenities for families looking for something to do. And again, it's in English and Spanish, so most of our community can take advantage of it.
And this is expected to reach 8,000 Boulder children and families in 2019, one of the most widely read and distributed pieces of literature. That's awesome. I mean, is this something that is something that you guys have planned from the beginning, that this would be across the board, try to get it out to as many people as possible.
Yes, so that really was a goal. And part of why we're able to do that is that Growing Up Boulder is a partnership. So we're based out of the University of Colorado Boulder, but our partners are Boulder Valley School District, as well as the City of Boulder. And because of that, we are able to distribute this throughout all Boulder located Boulder Valley School District elementary and preschools, which means that that's about 6,000 children who will get this in their Friday folder in the next few weeks. And again, it's free thanks to the generous support of the Boulder Library Foundation and Boulder Community Health. And so that's how we're able to distribute these. But the other thing is that you'll be able to find these maps in public kiosks all throughout town. So if you're not getting one through your child's school, you can also find them, you know, at the visitor center or at Chautauqua.
And tell us a little bit about Growing Up Boulder and some of the other projects that you're working on.
So since we've been around for 10 years, we have worked with 4,000 children and families over those 10 years. We've worked with 1,000 university students, so we have a lot of undergraduate interns from the program in environmental design, as well as graduate students that we work with, and then 84 programs or projects that we've worked on throughout the years with the city. So one of the best known projects we've done is the new playground next to the Boulder Public Library, which is called the Creekside Playground. A lot of the ideas that went into that came from more than 200 children and young people over the course of 6 years. So we worked with lots of BVSD school classrooms. We worked with I Have a Dream. We worked with preschools like Boulder Journey School. And the input of those young people went into that design, and you can see it in reality today.
And you also have a teen-friendly map in the works as well?
Yes. So the teen-friendly map we will be working on this summer. So if our listeners have a young person in their house between the ages of, say, 11 and 18 who's interested in contributing to this, we will be meeting at Boulder Public Library 2 times per week to actually co-create this map this summer. And we're hoping to have that digital teen-friendly map available by the end of 2019. It's a group of Masters in the Environment students from CU Boulder who are actually taking the lead on that under Growing Up Boulder's leadership and guidance.
So you mentioned that you had many, many people asking you about making these sorts of maps. What kind of a response, I'm curious, have you heard thus far from individuals that either have seen it or haven't yet, but are still know that it's coming? I'm curious what you've heard thus far.
So one of my favorite moments is this map has truly been an iterative and co-created process. From the very beginning, we've been working with 11 Boulder Valley School classrooms, many of them with emerging bilingual students. And we've also worked with many parent groups. And so we worked with the Crestview parents from FET, which is Families and Educators Together. And it was a largely Latino group of parents. And when we were talking with them, we had them looking at a draft of the map, giving us input about what we could make better. And they said, this is great, but how are we going to get this? How are we going to pay for it? And we said, no, it's going to come home free to every kid. It's bilingual. And there was applause that rang out. So we know there is a desire and an excitement about this map. The children who've worked on it are over the moon to see their ideas in reality, and they'll point to different parts of the map and said, I suggested that. That was my idea. And so this truly is a co-created map. What's so amazing about it, too, is that Growing Up Boulder took the leadership on it, but we had 2 undergraduate students in environmental design who actually made the map. And so one of them hand drew all of the drawings you'll see on there. So that's Abe Prophet. And then our other student, Alex Heffling, actually put all the layers together. And there's something like 17 layers that went into this. Hopefully you look at this map and it just looks easy and beautiful to look at, but a huge amount of work went into this.
So tell us where people can find the map and find out more information about Growing Up Boulder and some of the projects you're working on.
Sure. So the map, again, will go home with kids, and it'll go home with many preschool kids as well. But you can also find it at the public kiosks around town. It should be publicly available. We have 10,000 that we've printed, and if we run out, we hope to get some funding to cover the next round of printing. We've heard requests from other cities as well. So again, if there were more funding, we would be able to do a second edition of this. The map will also be available digitally after September 2019. So we're working on that this summer. And you can find everything at our website, which is growingupboulder.org. It's just the words growing up and Boulder spelled as in the city. .org, and it's all up there on the website. Oh, and I should also say, if anyone's interested to learn more, at the Boulder Public Library in August and September, we will be having an exhibit of our 10-year retrospective. So you can learn more about those 84 projects we've been working on over the years.
And that was Mara Mincer, director of Growing Up Boulder, talking to us about Boulder's new child-friendly map. Mara, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
And you're listening to KGNU. This is The Morning Magazine. And now it's time for Tech Talks. Right now is the best moment you ever know.
This is Tech Talks on KGNU with students from the Innovation Center at St. Vrain Valley Schools.
Estás escuchando Tech Talks con KGNU de parte de estudiantes del Innovation Center en las escuelas St. Vrain Valley.
My name is Joanna Valle. I'm part of the radio team at Innovation Center, and I'm here with a special guest.
My name is Michael Langford.
Where are you from?
I was born in Chicago and raised in New Zealand until I was about 14, and then came back to the United States to finish high school. And I recently moved to Longmont about 3 years ago from Los Angeles.
I wanted to ask, where do you work or what exactly do you do?
I am a Local 600 Cinematographers Guild member, which allows me to work on large television productions, movie productions. I'm technically a contractor, so I work essentially from job to job. Television shows typically go 3 to 4 months, and once the project is complete, we sort of move on to the next project.
How did you begin your career?
I've been taking photos my whole life. Photography has been a big interest of mine for a long time, and I think the production world, I wasn't quite aware of it until I was in New Zealand on a soccer team, and a teammate missed a game, and I found out why, and it was because he was shooting a commercial. And I asked him, oh, you know, do you think I could tag along next time and just hang out and help out? And he was like, sure. So I ended up working for this small production company in New Zealand for about a year that shot commercials. And I worked as a camera guy, sort of assistant, for an Auton Super 16mm camera, which is a film camera. And I would load the magazines, I would pull focus, change lenses, look after equipment. And that sort of was my introduction into the film world.
What skills are required on a daily basis? Like
the camera department itself encompasses several positions. I've had the opportunity to work in most of them in a professional way. I think the position I typically do involves using computers and involved having a broad knowledge of all the equipment that we're using. It involves a lot of teamwork. It also involves there's a lot of responsibility in what I do. So my job on a typical day, you know, it's very broad.
And what do you like most about your work?
I would have to say the healthcare and paycheck, creativity that goes on. Every day is a little different. So it's never monotonous. You know, every day can be different. The people, you know, you build really good, strong relationships and you make a lot of friends. It's also nice because, you know, as you go from job to job, you get to work with different teams and sort of, you know, broaden your horizons there a little bit. There's a lot of traveling. You get to go to unique locations. That's a lot of fun as well. So if you like to travel, this is a good business for that.
And what do you like the least about your work?
The least enjoyable thing about the film industry would be the hours we are required to work. So we typically put in between 60 and 70 hours a week, and those hours are staggered. And I would say also the people. You know, you're going to encounter people that you know, they're hard to work with. That can be challenging, you know, as with any job. But the film industry definitely has its fair share of interesting people.
Is there some kind of education, training, or like background that your job requires?
I actually did go to school. I took a minor in photography. I think that really helps. So the film school specifically is a really big commitment. Really know what you want to do. If you want to be a writer or director and you really know, it could be a good place to go.
You've been listening to Tech Talks on KGMU with students from the Innovation Center.
Una vez más, estuviste escuchando Tech Talks on KGNU con estudiantes del Innovation Center.
And that does it for The Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Hannah Lee Myers.